Okay, welcome to another episode of Cell Sites 101, the Tower Genius podcast. My name is Steve Cazella. I'm one of the partners here, and we are talking today with the other partner at Tower Genius, Kevin Donahue. And today is a serious topic. Kevin and I are going to reflect on the events of 21 years ago, the events of 9/11 when we were both up in New York. And I'd like to hand it over to Kevin. Kevin, wanted to, remember that day and just kind of go back of where, you know, what happened. I remember I was actually working for Kevin's site acquisition company up in Rockland County, New York, Integrated Wireless Alliance. And I guess I'd gotten into work early as a good employee would. I was in there, I guess, sometime after 8:30, 8:40. And just at my desk, kind of getting ready for the day. And Kevin, you came in, I remember, and we turned on the television.
Yeah, I had heard coming in, listening to the news, that, you know, a plane had hit the World Trade Center. And you right away kind of suspected that it was an attack, because there's not a lot of flight paths running, you know, at those kind of heights, and being an accident was, you know, a chance of, you know, one in a million. I got into the building and called everybody in to a small TV, turned it on, and as we were watching the coverage, you know, the second plane hit.
Yeah, I remember that.
And, you know, we watched as, you know, buildings fell. But, yeah, it was a surreal day. Most people don't remember what a beautiful day it was. It was so nice out, and
yeah, it was no humidity. It was clear blue skies. I remember it perfectly.
Yeah, and so what I did is I had then you know, new people are going to want to be with their family. Some of their family members may have worked down there, so I sent everybody home. You know, we didn't know what was going to happen next, and that evening I was called by Verizon, a representative from Verizon who ran the New Jersey, most of the New Jersey market, northern New Jersey market, who was being put on a team because they were getting hassled for not having coverage because, you know, most of the cell sites went down. This New York telephone switch building on the West Side Highway went down, and power was out. So even sites, you know, that yeah, they just had battery backup. They didn't have generators, most of them at that time. So I had handled, as part of the, you know, the 9X mobile recovery team before we merged with Bell Atlantic, we had a team that would go out handling emergencies, plane crashes, you know, any type of major outage or something where people needed temporary coverage, or, you know, say if Con Ed had, you know, had a problem at one of their major stations where they would go down, we would go out to make sure that they had communications, you know, to reach out for other folks, and coordinating things with various entities, whether it's the feds, the state, or the city of New York. But obviously, you know, we weren't really prepared to handle something as big as, you know, what happened in 9/11 and all the cell sites in downtown New York going out. And so they asked us to put together a team to come in, and I called all the employees, including, you know, the folks that we had working down in Baltimore, and, you know, one of my friends that was working for us on another project down in Georgia, and everybody started driving north to get ready to roll out and assemble and put up temporary cell sites and get generators placed. And, you know, you can imagine what a mad scramble it was.
It was chaos. It was chaos. I remember the Verizon war room, I guess they called us into that boardroom there and trying to sort things out and triage things, I guess.
Yeah, well, I remember when we walked in and I saw the way they had it laid out, and some of the personnel they were sending in alone could have put some people in a dangerous situation. That's why I kind of took control and just said, No, this is not how you do it. You know, we have to send, you know, send two-man teams, four-man teams, and, you know, I picked the people where they should go. And
Understandable.
Yeah, and then they had, you know, the people just didn't have the experience for something like that. So we helped organize them. You know, we had by far the most manpower to throw at it, you know, bringing all of our people in. And as soon as we got there, you know, we thought that they'd be more organized, and they weren't. You know, we had to call down to one of my buddies who ran one of the NYNEX facilities for operations, and he was in charge of getting people badges and such to access the property. So we needed to produce for everybody, not just our folks, but everybody going down to downtown New York. All these other consultants had to have NYNEX, you know, badges. And also we needed to get hard hats for people, and they wouldn't be allowed down, you know, near the pile, you know, from the rubble, you know, where they had to work there. So we actually were going around and working with the NYNEX mobile folks. And many people had helmets that they never used. They were given to them. They'd maybe wear once in a blue moon. They had to go out, you know, during a construction site, but most of them, you know, never left the building. You know, they were project managing things from kind of afar. And we went around and confiscated those helmets so that we could get enough people down the field to start commandeering corners and pieces of property. And then we got down there. It was, you know, we had to go through Army checkpoints and mixed with the state police and NYPD on the West Side Highway to get in. And then we broke down to the various teams, you know, and headed to various sectors to try and do work. The first area besides, I know you were up on the buildings over.
I was below Canal Street. I mean, I remember driving down there, and then there was no such thing as a one-way. You just could drive wherever you want. It was bizarre because you could really drive wherever you wanted to.
There was no movement in
any direction. And yeah, I mean, I remember parking the car. I was driving my vehicle, and the first thing I got out, and an FBI agent came up, and he wanted to see all of our credentials. So, I mean, they weren't joking. They weren't messing around down there. And I think that was the same day that President Bush did that, the megaphone on the fire truck. I think that was Thursday, Kevin, if I'm not mistaken, we were down there. So it took us maybe a day to get our stuff together. Yeah. I think we were down there on Thursday, or was it Wednesday and Thursday? I don't remember.
Yeah, we were down there for a couple of days, and I had to be down there for even further days because we were doing the microwave shots. Because once we compared the sites, they only had a couple of pieces of microwave equipment. And so they had, the problem is in New York, of course, think of each building as an obstacle or like a mountain that you're trying to, you can't beam a microwave signal through it. So they were going to have a bunch of hops to even get one site on the air. And, but we were lucky because we were able to find a switch, and that's, you know, maybe a story for a couple of minutes down the road. But, you know, we had gotten into the city. I know you guys were in some buildings. I think Danny might have been with you.
Danny was down. I was with, well, I don't want to give the name of the employee, but I was on the Travelers building and below Canal Street in a couple places. Danny was more right down there, like closest to the pile, I guess.
Yeah, they were like a couple of blocks up above like Building 7 that eventually came down.
Yeah.
I was actually down at Ground Zero. I took that team and asked employees to go in. And also, I think the person running it thought that she'd rather have, you know, an Irish guy going in since, you know, I looked like a cop. And so people weren't giving us as much of a hassle. So the first thing we did is we walked over. And I used to come out of right where Liberty Plaza was, the escalators that would come up in the World Trade Center. I first got out of college and was working downtown. I used to go up there, and I was, the first major impact, you know, was seeing the escalator was like the only thing left there, and just a pile of rubble. Man, I used to come up there every day, and then they had set up a temporary morgue in Liberty Plaza, and we went in there to look at using it for a building. Everything was completely empty. They weren't even using it for the morgue that had gotten moved up to the ice rink up on the West Side Highway. And when we came down, the cops like swatted out on us, the NYPD, and they're like, oh, that building's supposed to come down. And we're like, we didn't see any damage to it. I don't know why you think it's coming down.
Yeah.
And then we looked across the street, and there was the headquarters, which had normally been in Building 7, for the fire department and emergency services for the state, federal, and, you know, city folks, was gone, you know, and the building went down. And then what they had set up a temporary command center for the fire department in the Burger King, right across from the World Trade Center, and just across the street. And that kind of hit me too, because that's, you know, a sight I used to see every day, you know, before it.
Sure.
The weirdest part of it, I think, was, you know, not just, you know, worrying about people you knew that were missing and such, but we had to go down to put one cell site just a block or a couple blocks south of the World Trade Center. It was the very northernmost part of Battery Park City, and they had their garage there. We saw some sort of electrical service that was on in their garage. We saw lights. It was obviously from, you know, an auxiliary generator that they had, but we were trying to get power anywhere we could. And we had to break in to the building, into the garage. And it was something, like something out of a movie, because when you went in, everything was covered under a couple of inches of dust.
Yeah.
Like this almost looked like a gray sand. And you had, like, you know, Porsches and, you know, Ferraris and BMWs, Mercedes, all covered.
Yeah.
And you, when you walked, it was like walking on the moon with the footprints you'd leave.
Were you wearing your I know we picked up N95 respirators. That's the first time I had ever seen one. And I know that I had mine with me, and everyone on my team had one. Were you wearing one down there?
No, what happened was when we had deployed you guys out to go get them at the various, when we were trying to assemble to leave, we, you know, we were delayed for a few hours to get the badges, the helmets, all stuff like yeah. that. If you remember, I'd sent everybody out to scour.
Yep. Home Depot and everywhere. Sure. Yep.
Any local hardware store. And they already had been bought out. Everything had been purchased by the Fed. It's the first thing that FEMA did. And somewhere between buying them and getting them downtown New York, wherever they staged them was not where a lot of the people were. So we weren't getting access to that. We just had some cheap, you know, kind of masks similar to like surgical masks, which didn't do anything, you know. And the problem was is that all the buildings, you know, when it happened, you know, people were kind of pushed out of downtown New York as quickly as possible. And, you know, certainly the feds and, you know, state law enforcement were in the city were really concerned about the secondary attacks. You know, people, there had been rumors that were floating around that, you know, the plan was to go in and try and kill the E-911 responders. So we didn't get access to that at that point. So we were kind of, you know, after an hour or two, those other things weren't catching anything anymore. They were just making it tough to breathe. And when you got up on the buildings, because they all had their HVAC units, their air handlers still operating, a lot of people ran out of the city and they just left the automatic systems on. So while all this stuff was in the air, it was filling up in the ventilating systems for all these buildings. And that's how all the stuff got into Battery Park City. All the windows were closed, everything was buttoned up, and except for the air handlers, and they were just basically so full, the filters weren't catching anything. They were just cutting through the filters and filling up everywhere. And you know, it was just kind of a crazy situation. And then we moved over toward Wall Street to do a couple of sites, and for the most part the landlords were pretty helpful. We had one landlord over by
in Jersey City. We had a problem with a landlord. I don't want to name the company, paint company, but they wanted compensation. And
that happened with one of the people that it was over by, I guess it was Maiden Lane, like over by Maiden Lane going towards like Wall. And this one landlord asked for compensation. And after I went up and down him like a drill sergeant, he was practically crying and said, no, take it, you know, do what you got to do.
Right. These things need to get deployed, because everybody was still under the impression that, you know, people were being pulled out potentially, and it was still a rescue operation. So There was a total of, if I recall, 36 Cell on Wheels cows deployed by the teams that.
Yeah, and that was what we did the corners. We hit a couple of the parking garages. We had gotten lucky with them. They were really helpful. It was Edison Parking at the time that let us hit a few of their facilities, which was really prime for us because we could literally drive up our equipment, you know, drop it on the top of it and put the antenna up right there. So it really, really helped us. You know, it was like the perfect situation because parking is, you know, so difficult in New York. So yeah. A few of those strategically located Edison parking garages came in handy. It bumped into a lot of people I knew. We went into AIG on over by Water Street, and I ran into, you know, one of my brother's friends who just went in and told them, hey, we're taking your property out here, this corner. And they were very helpful. The guys from AIG were, you know, bent over backwards to assist us in trying to run temporary power because they had a, you know, big turbine generator and stuff to get us power out there. They were really helpful, but it was just, you know, kind of weird. You run into a friend you haven't seen in 10 years. You know, I had a couple of friends that were involved in the recovery when they were trucking things out. And,
yeah.
You'd run across them on Broadway, but it was just an odd situation.
Sure. And
like you said, the whole time everyone's still thinking that, you know, there was rumors they had heard people down in, most people don't realize there was a mall underneath,
yep,
in the basement of the World Trade Center. Most of the folks outside of New York didn't know that, and the actual mall, they, you know, all the rubble was laying on top of it and burning. And so there was all these rumors that they had heard people that were alive down the mall. One of my friends, who was a detective, street crimes unit, with the NYPD, he was one of the first ones into the mall. They actually had opened it up. They were sitting there like digging, you know, working with the construction workers, the fire department, NYPD, and they finally got where they could pop it. When they popped it, just all this like super hot air came flowing out like 150, 160 degrees.
Jeez.
But they knew at that point there was, you know,
no hope.
It was basically like an upside down Dutch oven, you know. And most of the people, I'm sure, were heading for their exits. But, you know, we had a lot of friends in the PD and the fire department, and one of my good buddies from Iona, who just gotten back a short time before, like a year and a half from working over in England, you know, was killed. Working at, you know, a trading desk, and you know, we all had friends we lost.
Of course.
Same day, but then when we finally got those all worked out, and most of the people, you know, working for Verizon at the time were, you know, good folks. They were all trying to help out. There was one or two knuckleheads that won't be mentioned that just kind of got in the way, and we had to kind of, you know, put them in their place and move them out of the way and where they wouldn't hurt themselves or others. But we then started working the microwave project, and we were just really limited. So I got lucky. I went with my one buddy who had come up from Georgia, and we just knocked on the door over at the Bell Building, you know, by the Brooklyn Bridge, and right by Police Plaza. And I just asked them if they had any space in their switch, something that was up and working, because so much of everything was down. And they said, we just tested a switch, and they had all this, you know, they had a backup generator, they just hadn't turned it on. So it was like God reaching down to help us. And we were able to use that building by, like, instead of putting up two or three or four cell sites, because that's all the equipment we had, we were now able to see into, instead of jumping from three or four buildings to get around buildings, we could see a direct shot. This building sold most of the sites in downtown New York. And they were able to use microwave shots from those temporary cows that we put up, the cells on wheels,
yep,
to that building. And then through the fiber that they had there, we could get up to Lake Street. So, you know, magically we were able to get sites up. And I know Verizon, through no fault of their own, was being, you know, harassed by the feds and the state, because all of a sudden cell phone coverage was down. You know, the same folks who, you know, would battle us on zoning, you know, were or would yeah, be your
support. Funny how that works out, works both ways there. So
yeah, right. Think of all the times they turned us down from trying to go in parks where we offered to build them ranger towers or, you know, things they could use for themselves. They turned us down, and then they're screaming and yelling, well, why don't you have cell coverage? I'm like, you know, in those places. So,
sure.
But we ran into one guy that I knew over at New York Tel, and he was super helpful. And one weird story was that we got up on the top of that building and we're trying to figure if there's chases that are open to run the wires. And I've been working with a company, it was Oklahoma Microwave that had come in. They were great. These guys had like no fear, you know, of, you know, being up on the edge of a building or, you know, a steel structure. These guys were great at climbing a tower. And I was on the phone talking to them and trying to see down with a mag light down into this chase. And all of a sudden, Andrew, you know, my buddy, starts saying, hey, look at your chest. I'm like, what are you bothering me for? Can you see I'm struggling here to see down this thing? And I look up and there's a black helicopter. You always hear these stories about black helicopters.
They had a red dot on you.
Yeah, they were obviously looking to shoot anybody. And then we found out later where we were messing around. They had all these Yagi and WIP antennas, and it was basically all the federal agencies' antennas were up on that building at the time. And so they came over to take a look, you know, which was, you know, obviously a good thing to do. And they had a spotter and two shooters on either side. And the weird thing was, you know, you hear these people say that, you know, these helicopters have made practically no noise. This helicopter was, you know, maybe 80 feet in the air and maybe 120 feet off the side of the building, and you could barely hear it. But if you looked in the distance, like every 10, 12 blocks, there was a helicopter. And they had all different types of helicopters. They had state police, they had military, they had NYPD, but they also had those for the feds, the nuke sniffers, where they would fly around a little bit more and the other ones just stayed in the air in like one place until they ran low on fuel and they'd peel off.
Yeah, and nobody knew what was going on. It's scary times, you know. And I remember, well, I called my brother Pete, who was working very close to the World Trade Center as a recruiter, technical recruiter, and I'm like, get out of there, just go. And he said he was on the PATH train over to Jersey City or Hoboken, I don't remember, I guess Jersey City, and he was under the Hudson when the second tower came down. And he got out of there, and he's like, you know, I never listened to you except that one time. I'm sure glad I did. And as it turns out, when we were down there, you know, he was a volunteer firefighter. He was down there. My brother Charlie was an electrician who actually was in the original World Trade Center. You know, he was there at the original bombing. He was there all day bringing people out of the building. He was down there, you know, doing work with his union, sent him down there to work on electrical stuff. And my brother Andy he's an RN, and he was on call waiting for patients that never arrived. And, you know, we were all four of us
down there
one way or another. It was weird, but no one had, you know, we had no idea of knowing. And just the surreal, like, even remember coming out of there and then, you know, thousands of New Yorkers were on the other side of the fence, and just that weird feeling. I don't know. I just never forget that. But
considering when we were going in, like, they were, the streets were lined with just regular people with signs cheering us in as the, you know, going into help, which I thought was really pretty wild.
Yeah, it was weird. I get goosebumps just thinking about that. It was just very strange.
Especially when you think about the other people that were putting up signs of their loved ones that were
missing. I still have some of those photographs that I took a few photographs down there.
Yeah, it was so sad. But the weirdest and kind of thing I remember the most about it was the most vivid, like something I know I'll never get out of my head, was a guy from the fire department, retiree, had come back in. And I was walking with two gentlemen who were, you know, of Arab descent. So, of course, you know, all the E911 responders were looking at them sideways, and these were engineers coming in to try and help them get, you know, the network up. So this one fireman looked very Irish, but he was covered in gray like soot, and he had his bunker gear on, and with a bunch of other firemen, they were taking a break, and he had the bluest blue eyes, like they stood out from like 20 feet away. And, you know, a couple of guys were looking at me to say, are the guys you with you okay? And I'm like, yeah, we're, you know, we're with the phone company here to get some cell sites up for you, to get communication in here. And the one guy, he probably had been there working, you know, from the moment those buildings fell. He grabbed his gear and drove down there. And he looked so tired, but he yanked at my pants and just said, hey, thank you for coming down to help. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. You know, what we're doing is nothing compared to what you're doing. And they were there, you know, sifting through and finding body parts of their friends. It was so weird. But at the downtown area, people, even the pictures that people have of it, the ones that were done professionally or the video, it's not as impactful as when you were down there. Literally, if I wanted to draw like a parallel to it, I would say it was like Beirut in 1986. Like, people couldn't believe here's this pristine part of New York, Wall Street, you know, all these great restaurants and bars and you know, beautiful office buildings. And it was quickly reduced to looking like Beirut for blocks. And it was just crazy. You know, there was obviously sometimes, you know, the last few days when we were there, we were coming out, we ran into, you know, a couple of tourists who were down there taking pictures, and, you know, one of them was laughing. And Andrew, you know, my friend, you know, worked for us down south, he almost killed a guy. I had to pull him off the guy. Yeah. You know, but they didn't mean anything. Some people just didn't know what to do or say. It wasn't like this guy was cheering it on. It just, you know, it was some weird thing that made him giggle, and it was just in the wrong place the wrong time. But it was, you know, it was crazy. But, you know, so many people have had health problems afterwards. And but, you know, the bottom line was everyone wanted to help out. And when Verizon tried to pay us, and we did, you know, more work than anyone. Some of the other consultants didn't go below Canal Street. They were all up above. They didn't want to be down there because of all the rumors. Sure. And, you know, problems that were going to take place, you know, potentially attacks or whatever. And so when they called, you know, they wanted to pay us. And, you know, I'm sure they had gotten, you know, a bucket full of money from the feds to spend. And some of the companies, I guess, that weren't doing the most work, or certainly weren't, you know, maybe they were involved in 3 or 4% of the project, were charging them through the nose, and we refused. And I think it ruffled a couple of feathers, but I think other people understood that, you know, we said to them, look, we look at the, you know, some of us lost friends or family, or, you know, just people we knew from our communities and who didn't make it. And, you know, we looked at it as blood money. So we wouldn't accept it. And, you know, it was still to this day, you know, I don't care if I didn't have two nickels thrown together, I wouldn't have taken money for that. And, you know, I'm not blaming the other people who did. Didn't they make their choices? But we basically did it pro bono. All we asked is, we laid out an awful lot of money for them to run around and buy materials and stuff like that. And we just asked for them just to reimburse us for that money. That was it. So,
yeah.
You know, but that's pretty much it. There was, you know, and every year, the, you know, time, you know, adds up. It doesn't lessen, like, the impact for me. I'm sure it's the same way for you, you know. You know, and the whole time that you're down there, when you're the boss, you're worried about the people that are underneath you, you know, working for you right there at the time, and you have to keep an eye on them. And so they don't wander away and walk into the wrong place or something. But you also, you know, you're worrying about your people, and it's not like I could reach out for you guys, you know, while you were on other rooftops and doing things. You know, it wasn't like we could talk every 20 minutes for me to make sure everybody was okay. because there's just no coverage in downtown. But we got the coverage up and running. You know, I was very proud of what, you know, you all did. You know, and I would definitely, you know, do it again if...
let's hope not.
Yeah, but I mean, if something like ever happened, you know, whether it's a natural disaster or man-made, you know, I wouldn't have changed a thing, you know, going in. You always want to feel like you're trying to help. And if you have a set of skills that, you know, could make things happen, you know, easier or faster, however you want to look at it, you sure. know, you go and you do it. And because if it wasn't for our team, you know, which probably did 65%, 70% of the recovery, you know, there's a lot of other people down there claiming they were doing it. You know, they weren't down in the middle of it, you know, like we all were. And, you know, now, of course, you know, Verizon would need, you know, our help. They have a, it was funny that we had.
They have a whole team now that does this stuff, right?
Yeah,
they have a whole
division. A few directors, you know.
Yeah.
And we did it as a side thing. You know, it was all like management employees and a handful of operations guys who were great, who, you know, the guys that were like the best, you know, that in the industry, that did it just, you know, we had pagers, your pager went off, you called in the number and found out what, you know, what emergency was going on that you were needed for. And when we merged with Bell Atlantic, they got rid of those teams, the emergency, you know, management team. So, and we fought with them. We said, it's not costing you anything. All the cell sites we put together are basically from spare parts. We had a few of them that we built literally out of spare parts and from other cell sites that were, you know, we sent the parts out to be refurbished or whatever. And after they had broken and we got them up and running and we had them there. So, you know, we had like homemade towels before anybody made. Like now you can go and buy them from all these manufacturers where they, you know, have all these hydraulic lifts and the tower built into it and, you know, prefabricated rooms on, you know, on a wheel. Or, you know, cabinets, and they basically told us they didn't need it. That's why they, you know, they called me. They were lucky they had Ferris Howitt working for them at the time, and Ferris is like a technical genius. Like this guy was, you know, if you went to a meeting in another part of the country, like, you know, some industry association meeting, and if you were around any of the techies and you know, they ran away, they heard you were with 9X or Bell Atlantic, 9X Mobile, they'd always be like, oh, do you know Ferris Howitt? But saying you knew Ferris Howitt, that you worked with him, was like saying Superman lived across the street from you. And he was just a great guy. And that's another thing I remember was him being down across from City Hall, and I was driving down, heading towards the Battery down Broadway. And like you said, there was, the streets were wide open, you know, once you got past the military and state police. And Ferris was yelling my name, and you know, I stopped to see him, and he was like, you know, boy, wasn't it a wise decision they got rid of all these teams? Like, they're lucky to call us back, and we all responded to come back. And but he was, you know, obviously, you know, on top of everything, and I'm sure he was a big part of the technical planning. Like, once we did all the, you know, securing locations, getting, you know, the microwave sites all put together for them, then there's the next stage where people have to assemble that, right? And that's what, you know, he did with the ops folks and a couple of guys from the construction team, and they did a great job. So, but, you know, it was a great, great group of people, you know, that I was lucky to work with back in the old team. And then, yeah, you guys all did, you know, way above and beyond what people would have expected of you. And they certainly didn't expect that much from our team, even though they knew that we had a lot to offer. But, you know, we kind of came in and took it over because we knew the best way to do it. You know, right? We knew what to do the best with the least amount of resources and to keep this thing, you know, moving. And, you know, it went great. And, you know, like I said, as sad as it was, you know, one of the worst moments, you know, in U.S. history, there was also, you know, so much, you know, good that went on. Like, you realize, you know, we fight and we bicker and over a whole bunch of things, you know, in this country. But when, you know, the crap hit the fan, you know, nobody cared, you know, what ethnic background people were from. Nobody cared, you know, what color, what, you know, what political party, or, you know, they just buckled down and worked together to get stuff done.
Yeah, it was a rare moment in this divided country that we now live in. So, but Kevin, hey, listen, thank you for sharing. This is actually, we've gone over half an hour here, but yeah, it's interesting and good to reflect and never forget. And
yeah, that's the way to put it.
Yeah. All right, Kevin. Hey, thanks. I appreciate it. And I guess we'll upload this. We'll probably put this up on the podcast as well on, I guess, for whatever, Spotify or iTunes. I'll figure it out. I'll take a look. I just don't know. We'll get this uploaded to YouTube and
all right. Have a good day then, and to everybody in the listening audience, I hope you learned some stuff, and you know, if you have any questions or anything, you know, ask us, you know, about that day. We'd be happy to answer the questions.
Yeah. All right. Have a good day, Kevin. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
See you.